are you?
Star-Lord.
Who?
Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw. Forget it.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat. Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 89 of Behind the Panels, the comic book show that's hooked on a feeling and high on believing. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And I'm David Longo.
What a bunch of a-holes.
In this issue, we dissect the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. You're welcome. Then, then DC, Marvel and Image unveil their May lineups. Fox's Fantastic Four is cast, and what we've been reading from this week's releases, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Daredevil by Mark Waid, Marcos Martin, Chris Somni, Paolo Rivera, and Javier Rodriguez. This is Behind the Panels. Ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright.
What else could we play there? you may have noticed that the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer dropped this
really?
Week. Yeah. You may be one of the 10 billion people that have watched it. I actually think we're looking at the YouTube numbers the other day, like 2 days after it was released, and it was like, you know, 7.5 million people had watched it the second day. And it was like, I reckon that's just us.
Yeah.
I think I watched it about 10 times in a row.
At least a million of those are me, so, you know.
We will be doing later in the show one of our patented audio commentaries for the trailer. We'll talk about it a little bit more.
It's just going to be us going,
squee!
Yeah, if you heard a high-pitched noise from the Sydney region for the last couple of days, it's just us harmonising our squeeze. Oh, man, like, you know, look, we are very, very excited about this film. And we're talking about this before the show. We're going to make it our mission on the show to make sure this film does not fail in any way, shape, or form.
We're going to make sure it doesn't get John Carter'd, people.
Yeah, like, you know, for some reason, there's already the prognosticators of doom about this film. You know, it's the ghost of John Carter riding around on the shoulders of a giant tree. You know, it is worrying that people, before the trailer even dropped, there were headlines from the notorious IO9 saying things like, you know, why this will be Marvel's first flop. And they went on to say things like, you know, it's a risky venture for Marvel. And it is. It's a risky venture. But when you have troll-like headlines, you know, most people don't read beyond the headline.
I'd like to remind everybody, and we'll talk more about this probably in GMC this week. Yes, it is coming back. But but I would like to I'd like to remind people that when Star Wars came out, in 1977, nobody had ever heard of Darth Vader.
No.
You know, exactly it was right. Like people sit there and go, oh, but, you know, nobody's ever heard of these characters. You know, all the other characters Marvel has name value. It's like, you know, there are original films out there.
I'm just going to put this out there. 90% of the films that are released every year feature characters I've never heard of before. Okay. Yet I still somehow managed to go, oh, I understand it. He's got the nose and the eyes and the hair. Yeah, okay, like he's a human. I get it. Okay, fine, we go. Get over yourselves, internet.
Yeah.
Go and enjoy this film because it looks like a lot of fun, but more on that later. For now, we hit up the Wayback Machine for something that we know was a hit, or probably not, actually.
for some of the pictures you picked, maybe not.
Probably not. It's our vintage clip of the week.
Very noisy.
fancy knife.
What the hell do you want?
Information.
The wrong people see me talking to you, it's all over for the Turk.
Then be quiet. Tell me about new people in the neighborhood. A man rented a room last Wednesday. He's back tonight. 5'10", bearded, a hermit. Talks to nobody.
How the hell am I supposed to...
This knife hurts my ears.
Where'd you learn all that stuff?
Talk to me.
Well, I don't know. Everybody goes in and out of the neighborhoods. There's all kind of places like that on Chester Street. My aunt's got a place near Gage, but he ain't there. But Chaz's place is full. He's bragging about all the rent money he gets out of his place on Wentworth.
Wentworth?
Yeah, next to the liquor store on 7th. Can you teach me some of the moves?
Don't hurt anybody, Turk. Be very good. Read a book.
Well, I've been very mellow lately. I've been a sweetheart.
This knife hurts my ears.
And that clip brought to you by Millways. It's on 7th next to...
That was from the notorious The Trial of the Incredible Hulk, 1989.
Wow, what a special one that was. And most notably because it guest starred Daredevil.
Yeah. Or Darid Evil, as I'm deciding to...
Wow, that was a special clip. I'm really mellow.
Read a book. I've been a sweetheart. Oh, fellas, I'm just going to hit this button so we can talk about what we've been reading.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
Read a book, why don't you?
And I will remind our listeners, if we do run a little bit over today, please forgive us, we forgot to start the clock.
Oh, right. As far as we know, we could have been going for 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
Okay, a bunch of stuff came out this week. Let's just quickly go through the list. Harley Quinn, number 3, great book.
Look, I just read this before the show, and it is continuing that sense of fun that the book has started off with from that very first Zero issue.
The book's nuts. There's like rotting corpses in the corner, and
she goes on a ghost ride, and a guy jumps out to scare her, so she shoots him with a shotgun.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
this is fun stuff.
Yeah, following straight on from that issue last month with Poison Ivy.
And this one, the focus of this is a gift that Poison Ivy left behind.
Yeah. So it's kind of the Valentine's issue, isn't it?
Yeah,
Can I just tell you, I guess. Yeah, well, yeah. So it's the love plant. Yeah. Can I tell you, for me personally, because we always talk about art styles and so forth, I love the art in this
guy's great. This is really
one step down for me from like if Amanda Connor herself was drawing this book, you know? Yeah, he is terrific.
I really love the... just like the nose, like a little nose. It's just like, you know, he's kind of got that little cute button nose and stuff. And it gives it that kind of cartoonish sort of quality to it without being an outright, you know, cartoon. Like it's somewhere between, you know, it's somewhere between, what do you call it? The guy's name's Chad Harden, by the way. It's somewhere between Amanda Connor and almost the Bruce Timm kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? Yeah. No, I agree. And I love the
which is great because that's where the character came from. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I love the fact that there's that one sequence near the end where the cop jumps out to arrest her after she's basically done away with all those people, and the cop gets a whiff of it, and the female cop gets a whiff of it, and basically kisses her and goes, "I don't know why I did that. I was going to arrest you, but I'm not even into girls."
The other book that we'll talk about while we're at DC, because you've read a couple of DC books this week is Justice League 28, the Justice League books this week. One of the things we were saying in the car on the way over here, that's right, people, we just drive around Sydney together, is that something about Justice League 28 being part of Forever Evil and Forever Evil itself, I'm kind of in my head, I can't separate the two.
And Justice League of America.
I can't get the separate the issues completely. And this isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just that it might mean that there's a cohesive, you know, kind of structure to it.
Yeah.
But it's just that sometimes I events and things that happened in one issue, I get confused.
Well, we started talking in the car about Justice League 28 and you're saying something and I'm looking at you like, that's not what happened. And then it occurred to me that I'd actually read Forever Evil from last week and it had blended in with this issue. Okay. And I was completely lost as to what issue we were talking about. But
what's going on in the Forever Evil at the moment? Because I haven't read any of it. I'm just waiting until it finishes.
The main thing in Forever Evil that's happening is that Lex and his band of unmentionables are his dirty dozen.
Have now teamed up with Batman.
Teamed up with people. Batman and Catwoman. And Batman's finding himself not in charge of the situation. And they're moving towards fighting the bad guys
spoilers and all, but we're actually leading into it's going to be a very interesting finale, I think, because basically Sinestro has now landed on Earth. He's done away with what's his name?
Power Ring,
the bad Green Lantern, because of course Sinestro is so much more powerful than he is. And the little group of evil that has gathered have basically said, what we need is you to be our leader at the moment because you've got power and blah, blah, blah. So what we're leading to looks like to me is that even if we do get the Justice League back, there's going to be a power struggle then with Sinestro, who's basically saying, I'm in charge now.
The 5 years later event, which is coming up, which this is going to lead straight into that Future's End. We know this. Is basically about where, you know, Earth is reeling from a conflict with another Earth and some other bad stuff happens. And there's a time-traveling Batman Beyond. So
it's going to be messy. That being said, Justice League 28...
was really good. Because
reintroduced.
It was reintroduced the Metal Men, and it's a really good... While, you know, ostensibly you can sort of say that it's not a great, from overall storytelling point of view, because it's just basically putting pause while we tell a backstory, which is what all the Justice League issues have been doing lately. The backstory that it tells is really, really good. Geoff Johns reimagines the Metal Men for the New 52, and it's a really good origin.
It's great. It is a really, I'm going to go so far, I'm going to say it's a beautiful book.
It is a beautiful
because
book.
It's really touching. It's all about how the scientist creates the Metal Men. They are far beyond his expectations.
Immediately
far beyond his expectations, and he has to basically shelve them. Because the government wants to use them for nefarious purposes. And it's just a beautiful story. You know, it's a really beautiful origin story, for lack of a better word, for characters who have been around since what? God, how long have the Metal Men been around for?
Yeah, decades.
It's kind of like, remember that annual ages ago Scott Snyder did with Batman, like with the retold the Mr. Freeze?
Yes.
Yeah.
That kind of strikes me as something like that.
Yeah. And this is what I like. I like it when they can tell these one-off stories, which is, again, what I like about Harley Quinn. Because it is, at the end of every issue...
It's finished.
Like that little Valentine story was issue 3. There's no major arcs. There's nothing going on. It's just that story got told... And it was funny, and it was silly, and it was dumb, but it was a fun read.
Absolutely. It's just a charming, fun read. Yeah.
And then I can just come back to it in a month's time, not having to try and remember what's going on.
Yeah, you don't open the comic and go,
what am I up to? God. Like, what's going on?
So forget the Justice League angle. All this book makes me want Metal Men issue 1. Start it. Let's do it.
Over at Marvel, a bunch of stuff came out this week. We won't touch on Daredevil 36 too much because that is our pick of the week.
Absolutely.
So we'll talk about that more in a moment, but it was a really good issue. New Warriors number 1 came out. Did you guys get a chance to read this?
I did. It is an interesting retake of a book. Actually, what I liked about it, the one thing I did really like about this book was the fact that it stayed within continuity.
Yes.
And they actually, at one point...
With Nova, that's been happening mostly.
But the one point I really liked about it was that Speedball, they come into town, he says, we're the New Warriors, and they go, really, you're...
Whose powers are mostly cocaine and heroin-based.
Pretty much. Yeah, so. But... I don't know how much you guys know. Dave, you know this because you've read Civil War, but it was actually the New Warriors who were responsible for started kicking off Civil War because of an incident where they blew up a town.
Yes, and they mentioned
that. Yeah, basically saying, we're always going to be remembered for that. We're never going to be able to strike out on our own. And that's pretty much true.
Yeah. Now, David, you would have read the New Warriors in their heyday.
I read parts of it. I only really caught up with New Warriors big time because of the Civil War conflict.
Yeah.
And so I had to go back a little bit and kind of follow up with it. It was never one of my favorite books, purely because I felt it was like Avengers Light.
Probably the big reason a lot of people loved, and what a lot of people are missing, is Richard Rider Nova.
Yes.
And we all are, from the Nova book, from The Guardians,
Did you guys read the latest Nova?
I'm actually a few issues behind on Nova because...
I'm 2 issues behind on Nova.
Yeah, I'm about the same because it's not... It's just not grabbing me at the moment.
It's spinning its wheels, really.
And I really, really want to love it. Because I've loved everything Nova related up until this point.
I like the sense of humor behind the Nova book.
Because when it started, it really felt like... Ultimate Spider-Man, like the early Bendis Bagley.
Absolutely, but what I wanted was it to have a couple of issues like that, and then get him into space, and then he could have become Nova.
Yeah.
But instead, they've kept him Earthbound, and they've kept him kind of under.
Now this is pod racing.
Yeah, and it's all kind of like, you know, his mother's telling him to go to bed. Yeah, exactly. And I kind of just feel like, just come and move on. You know, get on with it.
But still, I'm sticking with it because the premise of Nova is always good. And I think, you know, that they'll realize they've had a few writer changes as well. So I think they're finding their feet again after Jeff Loeb left. You know, they're kind of really trying to work out where they're going with it. I have confidence in it because Nova's going to be big business once the Guardians film come out. It already was because, and I think they have to keep Sam Alexander there because of his Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon appearances. Ooh, ooh. So there's all those things
maybe
to consider.
Maybe there's some sort of corporate synergy going on here. Like maybe Richard Rider will come back when...
I'm hoping is I'm hoping that when
you're probably right
there, when actually. Guardians comes out, et cetera, and Guardians finds a feat, we get back to Richard Rider, and that's actually Nova Corps and much more of the space stuff, and then this Nova can kind of stick with New Warriors. You know, that's what I'm hoping.
Because I have no idea how far into the show we are, I'm going to whip through the next couple really quickly. look, Avengers World number 3 came out this week. We were just talking about this before the show. We have no idea what this book is. It's
another opportunity to make another
it just seems to be more, because the Avengers title, also written by Jonathan Hickman, is still a strong title, even if I don't understand everything that's happening every week. It's still a strong title, it's still an interesting story, but this Avengers world doesn't seem to just have enough story thread in there to justify being its own book. It could quite easily be a backup in each issue.
I would rather them focus more on Avengers Assemble, quite frankly, and try and resurrect that, because that was such a good book.
That core, you know, Avengers my worry team is like what I want to read. You know?
My worry is we're going to get to like issue 12 or issue 20 of Avengers World, and then we're going to have to go back and read 20 issues. You know,
there's going to be something, because like Infinity 2 will come along. Yeah. And, you know, it's exactly what happened to me with Avengers. I got so far behind with that because I just...
And then I had to catch up. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then I caught up and I thought, okay, well, this is good. This is a great story. I just don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I think it's a good story.
I hope it's a good story.
The other number one release that came out this week was from Image. It was Undertow. Now, David, you and I, have you read this, Dave?
No.
I have a sort of
policy on Image now. I wait till it gets to 6 issues.
Yep.
And if I hear it's really good and it's maintaining I'll pick up the
trade. It's funny you should say that, because I think Image are really good at debut issues, and then and then sometimes the quality falls off a little bit. Not always the case. I don't think that's...
Yeah, like I learned
that's not even a blanket rule, but there are certain books that I've just stopped reading for whatever reason, because I think... One of the things I find with some of the creator owned books, and this is far too general a comment to make, but one of the things that I am finding increasingly is that I think at some point there is an advantage to the big editorial processes.
I agree, and the
group think of, you know, DC and Marvel. Not in every case, certainly not in every case. And I think the best cases are a comfortable in between. Undertow's a really good case example of this, where it's a really good concept. The artist is good, the writer is good, but somehow the meeting of those three things, in my mind at least, didn't make perfect sense.
I think you made
on page.
Yeah, you made a really good observation in the car when we come back to that, and you're saying that one of its problems is its colorist.
Because I think the problem isn't the art, it's the colorist, because most of it's set underwater.
And the whole book is this bluey, greeny color, and you cannot differentiate one character from another. So you end up with this kind of confused panels where you're going, who's talking to who at this point, and what exactly is going on? I didn't mind it. I thought it was interesting, but it took me about half the book before I actually figured out what
was going
on.
It's not until they're on land. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think, to me, when the visuals, you get confused by who's unless it's very deliberate, to me that there's a problem when you're having issues working out what's going on because of the visuals. Now, that's interesting. That said, the story itself is quite intriguing.
It's intriguing, and it has suckered me in enough that I do want to see a second issue.
Yes,
so,
definitely want to see a second issue.
Which I can't say the same one you don't have on your list here, but now it's gone, was a number one from Dark Horse, which was White Suits. Oh, yeah. Which came out this week as well, which I had the same sort of problems with. I didn't know what was going on through most of the book.
I haven't caught up with that one yet.
And I found the art style, it was so stylized that it was almost the style was getting in its own way. Mm. And so basically it was every panel was kind of like scratched and sketchy. And it was like, and you sit there going, I don't understand what's going on. And on top of that, It was just incredibly it was incredibly derivative.
I think there is a place for that, but that the sometimes the problem with art-driven storytelling is that you do, unfortunately, have derivative stories underneath them.
I felt like this is a story, the way it's been set up is like every cop drama spy thriller I've ever seen.
And that's a problem, because we've seen great examples of those in the last, you know, still
to
original.
To the point, spoilers and all, to the point, last page of this book ends with her showing him a file saying, "You're going to listen to me because I know who you are." You know? And you're sitting there going, "Oh, okay, right, okay, fine."
The truth is.
Yeah, the truth is.
Final book I want to mention. Actually, Dave, you've got a couple written down that you want to talk about. I want to quickly mention, because the sound cut out on us when I was plugging this last week, was A Voice in the Dark number 4, which actually came out this week. This is Laramie Taylor's book that he's written and illustrated this book.
Strong and still consistent.
Still strong. There's actually a bunch of great scenes in here. You know, if you want examples of good female-led books, there's a great bunch of scenes, dialogue at a party in this, where people are making these really clever back and forth. Mm. He does some really clever framing in this one too, where there's this sort of gargantuan man who's his head's sort of chopped off by the top of the thing. It's almost as though all the male characters don't.
Well, it's framed for the females.
It's framed for the females. Their voices don't count. But there's a really nice cameo in here. And it's the author himself turns up at the party and makes a couple of jokes at his own expense. And it's a really fun book. It was a nice little inside curveball that he threw in there as well. But again, it's one of those books that I think if you stick with it, you're going to get a lot more out of it, because there is...
And support this, man. It's a great book, and this is owner-created stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So this is what we want. I mean, look, you know, we talk about a campaign to make sure Guardians of the Galaxy is a success. Mm. We want to make sure this is a success as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
So, Dave, you wrote down a couple of other ones that you read this
week. Quickly, though, on the whole image thing, like, that, remember last year, guys, like 2013?
No, forgotten it completely.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Like, every single week there was a number one from somewhere.
Yeah,
like, and,
it's true.
And what exists today from those number ones is basically Revival and Saga.
Pretty much, there's pretty still much. Two that I read. Yeah,
yeah, like that are even in print still. Like most of them get to 6 issues, and it's kind of like...
You've got a point there.
There tends to be this... growing tendency of like, let's quickly make one issue that will be really good.
Yeah.
You know, well, what will happen in issue 6 or...
It's like a cooking pasta theory. You throw it against the wall, see what sticks.
Yeah, it's basically like comic books are now turning into pilot season all year long.
Yes, oh, good call.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, with the independent ones, it's easier and harder to do that. I mean, like, it's one thing when DC... Like, I mean, we all used to joke about how many DC used to do. But the thing is, you know, there's a fairly good chance if you throw out the new Daredevil and it's a number one, it's going to last until whenever they decide that it's time to finish, because they're going to sell Daredevil.
Yeah.
And it's really hard, and I think part of it is the marketing of these books.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
They don't have the money to spend on, you know, ads in Times Square, you know, like they did before Watchmen came out. You know, there was a giant... You couldn't swing a cat without hitting a Before Watchmen ad.
Mm.
Yet how much advertising is out there for Revival?
Yeah, but that,
Saga makes it to the top of the best
totally,
list despite
Brian K. Vaughan. But it's also the best book.
It is.
On
I
the
mean,
market.
It's legitimately a good
and
book.
Walking Dead as the show, and blah blah blah. But like the funny thing is, like with the comic books, like with DC and Marvel, the big two, they're superhero themed. So it's like, well, how do they continue that for 20 issues? Well, we'll just introduce a new villain. We'll just bring someone back. Like, there are millions of tropes that they can fall back on. And you can sort of go, well, I can see how that could get to issue 100.
Yeah.
Whereas something like these issue number ones, like...
There's so few books get to 100 anymore.
So few get to, like, even 20.
That's true.
And you kind of... You can almost now, after you've read so many number ones, you can pin the ones that are going to keep going, that are worth reading. You know, like something like The Fifth Beatle.
Yeah.
You know, like, you look at that and you go, that's a cool concept. That's a cool idea. But... It's not going to be around. You just
but it was put out as a one. It was put out as a
sorry,
graphic
it
novel.
I didn't read it.
Yeah, but it was put out as a graphic novel. But I think that's a good point though, because
like Pretty Deadly is
but
another example.
Maybe some of these they should be thinking in advance. You know, this is going to have 4 issues worth of life in it. Maybe we'll put it out as a graphic novel.
Well, we kind of saw that. We kind of saw that with Ghost, didn't we? They put it out as a 4 issue or whatever it was miniseries. It had life, so they've continued it as an ongoing.
Do you know? I think I know how to explain what I'm thinking. It's like, you know, when you go into a bookstore and there's that free page rule. It's like you read the first page and you're like, this is okay, I'm interested. You know, the first sentence has grabbed me, the first paragraph has told me everything that I need to know, I'll read the next page.
Yeah.
And if you get to free pages, you're going to buy the book.
Yeah.
Like that's how bookstores run, right? Well, it's kind of similar to comic books, isn't it? When you're looking at the cover, you know, that's the first step. You look at the cover, you know, that's interesting. You know, you look at the talent, you're like, well, that's good talent.
Increasingly, you get one. I mean, there was that introduction in we really do need that sidebar.
We do need that sidebar.
There was in the introduction to Green Arrow Year One, and I've forgotten who's written the introduction at this point, but it might have been Brian K. Vaughan, actually, who said, you get one page.
Mm.
In modern comic book series, you get one page. People see the cover on the shelves, they go and pick it up. I think David's died.
No, I was just looking to see if I had anything that could be a sidebar thing.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
You get one page. You know, at the most, you're going to see the cover. You like the cover. You pick it up. You open it. You look at the art and go, "Yeah, that looks pretty good." And then you might buy it. You know, you're not going to, short of reading the whole comic there in the story, you're right, though. I mean, the thing is, it is so hard to. I think marketing is the main thing. As you said, superhero books have got tropes to fall back on. They've got character brand identity.
That's the biggest issue.
Which is the biggest issue. But even those, I mean,
there are problems with them.
Sales are not what they used to be for any of them. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not talking about millions of comics being sold, millions of issues of each issue being sold.
We know that
anymore.
Because they keep relaunching and rebranding.
The cost of printing independent comics each month is staggering, you know? So, you know, of course some of these books are going to go by the wayside. I think digital is going to see a lot more creator owned stuff.
Maybe I'm being optimistic about it, or even maybe I'm being too cynical. It depends on how you read what I'm going to say. It's just like, if you're only making an issue, I think you need to sort of start thinking about making an arc or making a long-running...
Yeah, maybe going into reading. These things, you know.
I just think that there's more of that.
Should this be four issues? Yeah. Should this be a miniseries rather than ongoing? Should this be a graphic novel?
There was actually an argument made by Kevin Smith, and we should move on after this, but there was actually an argument made by Kevin Smith on one of his shows, one of his more lucid moments, where he basically said, why aren't we releasing all comic books now just as limited events?
Mm.
Because this idea of releasing a book and saying it's going to be the new ongoing thing, we really don't know what's going to be successful or not. So why not release everything as a 12-issue arc or an 8-issue arc?
And then
every 12 issues refresh.
And it's funny because it's the thing that's killing the comic book industry is the fact that it is ongoing. Every major publisher has tactics to kind of tackle it. The new DC did the whole new 52 purely so they could release 52 new number one issues to get new readers back on board. Here we are at issue 28. Who wants to go and start reading at issue 28?
No.
Every year, Marvel Now, all new Marvel Now, point one, you know, Marvel Now, point one.
Marvel,
you
know, what is it? What is that?
Now, I actually think Marvel's current strategy is pretty good. In fact, they've got an ongoing thing, but it has a big, this is the start of a new arc.
Yeah.
You can jump on here. It actually tells you on the cover. I think that's a really good marketing strategy. But the fact of the matter is, it's still an ongoing.
Hmm.
You know, if you release it as a four-issue miniseries, even if you release that four-issue miniseries as a collection off the bat, it's a one thing that a casual reader can walk into the shop and go, hey, have you got any books with Hawkeye in it?
Mm.
Actually, we really do. Matt Fraction's written this one volume here.
Yep. I think
here you go.
My suggestion, it probably wouldn't work, but I think they should just get rid of the numbers altogether and just put the month and the year.
Possibly. That's not a bad idea at all. Mm. We should be in charge of something.
Yeah, we should run.
Be in charge of something. If you've got any other ideas, please let us know.
What I read this week really quickly, Punisher 1 and 2 of the reboot.
You mean Punisher January and February?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Good series.
It is a good series.
Yeah, I like it. It's not bad. I'm waiting for the ultra violence. So.
No, but this is following very much in the same sort of
vein. I miss Garfinis.
This is kind of following in the same vein as the last series of Punisher. Was it Brubaker? Who did the last
one? Rucka? No, it was Rucka.
Rucka did the last, 20 issues or whatever it was. And it was a really good series. And this is following, it kind of follows in the same vein, same kind of style as it. I quite like it. I agree with you.
All right, next week coming out, the 26th of February releases will be Tomb Raider number one. This is by Gail Simone coming out through Dark Horse. This is a sequel to the game. So definitely worth looking out for because it will be a bridge between the Tomb Raider game and to the second Tomb Raider game, which is forthcoming. I'm very excited because Gail Simone's on fire at the moment. Not literally on fire. That would be unfortunate because she's a really good writer and we don't want to see her burn. Serenity Leaves on the Wind number two. Again, speaking of sequels, this is the follow-up to the film. I think I was talking about the first issue when it came out. It was quite good. Wake number six. Now, there's one that came out
Is that the end of Wake?
No, it goes for 12 issues.
Where has the Wake been?
Or 10? It's been around.
The Wake, I read one issue and I'm now waiting for it to be collected. So
that's because Scott Snyder's writing everything else.
Yeah.
An interesting one coming out next week as a one-shot. There you go. Here's a marketing concept. Superman Lois Lane, number one. Once again, a woman defined by the man in her life. I just wrote this one down because I just love the mashup. I want to see how the hell they do this mashup. X-Files conspiracy.
No way!
Let him say it.
X-Files conspiracy, Transformers number one. There you go. I want to know how that mashup works. There's also a new number one from Image Comics.
It might work as well as the current event that's taking place, which is DC Universe versus He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
You know what's hilarious? Based on this discussion we had for the last 10 minutes, these two could go on forever.
Revenge number one, another new Image Comics book. This is just a mini series coming out from Jonathan Ross. Jonathan Ross, the
Jonathan Ross.
Jonathan Ross, yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
Wassy. Fantastic Four is the new all new Marvel now.
I heard that's written by 12-year-olds. That new issue.
Oh, really?
Fantastic Four.
Yeah. It's synergy with the movie.
Excellent. Yeah. Yes, we'll talk about the casting in a moment. Hawkeye number 15 finally coming out about 2 months after 16, and Guardians of the Galaxy number 12, which I think is the fourth part of the trilogy in Grey.
Which I have to actually say, Guardians, I'm actually kind of back on board with at the moment.
Yeah, I'm digging that at the moment. So,
except for the Trial of Jean Grey.
I'm ignoring the Trial of Jean Grey part. I'm just enjoying the characters.
Yeah,
so.
Rocket hasn't said, "I'll murder your face" for a while.
No, and I'm actually, I'm actually really enjoying Angela's inclusion in the Guardians.
I am actually now, but for some reason I am putting I'm literally putting the lotion on the skin as I'm talking. So I think it's time that I hit up some news headlines before I go, you know, full Buffalo Bill.
Marvel has announced its new books for May. In addition to the return of Peter Parker in the 616, Marvel will also relaunch Miles Morales, the Ultimate Spider-Man.
DC has solicited the weekly New 52 Futures End for May. It will be set 5 years from now, following a war with another Earth, and feature a time-traveling Batman Beyond.
Okay. Marvel will also run a new event for May called Original Sin, which sees the Marvel Universe investigating the death of the Watcher.
Sounds like a Nick Cave album. Image Comics will launch a new Mark Millar miniseries called MPH in May. Other new series include Joshua Williamson's Nailbiter, Mark Silvestri's Rise to the Magi, and Kyle Higgins and Alex Siegel's Cowl.
ReadPop, the people behind New York Comic Con and Star Wars Celebration, plan a purely comics-focused 2-day event in New York for June called Special Edition NYC. And that's only until the movie industry catches on and wants to be involved.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of which, Fox's Fantastic Four has been cast. Here we go, people.
Okay.
And you were laughing hard before, Longo. Jamie Bell.
I've laughed long and hard all week about this.
The dancing fool. Michael B. Jordan, not the basketball player. Kate, the lesser Mara. And Miles Teller, the unlikely grouping.
And unlikely they are. Marvel has also confirmed that some of Avengers...
Age of Ultron!
...will be shot in South Korea.
Marvel is allegedly considering a list of Doctor Strange directors that includes Mark Andrews, Jonathan Levine, Nicolas Jarcel, and Dean Israelite.
Welsh actor Matt Ryan, best known for Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior... what? ...has been cast as the lead in NBC's Constantine. Who?
I just love that there's a subtitle, Suspect Behavior. Finally, Marvel Unleashed, the first guy. We don't have to do this story, do we?
No.
Okay, Marvel Unleashed, a trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy onto an unsuspecting public this week. It's awesome! It's time for one of our patented trailer commentary things.
Patented? Okay.
I don't know. We haven't patent pending. Here we go.
And... Dark and sinister.
Very dark and sinister. So it's a Marvel movie. What we've been used to. He's got a torch of some kind.
Chris Pratt has buffed up.
Do you guys think this is the opening of the film? Like an Indiana Jones kind of inspired?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. His bag of sand there. And I love the reaction.
Yeah. Hey, cool, man. No problem. No problem at all.
That line reading is awesome. No problem at all.
Star-Lord.
Who?
And that is the point the trailer sold me.
I like it. Goes, come on, man.
Implants. Annihilation reference. Novas. What do you think about the Nova uniforms?
Not fond of the Nova uniforms, but I can live with it.
Yeah, Drax looks awesome.
Drax looks brilliant. In a search for vengeance. Gamora looks fantastic. Well, yeah.
We all love Gamora. Dozen counts of
murder.
Hey! The internet's new hero, Rocket Raccoon.
I love that spit.
What the hell Groot.
And frame just like the comic books.
Taken straight from the DNA run.
Yep, where he leans down into the frame.
Peter Jason Quill. He's also known as Star-Lord.
Speaking of new heroes, he calls him that. This is
himself mostly.
He's wanted largely on charges of minor assault, public intoxication,
I love that it's like
and
a
fraud.
There's a reference in the bottom screen of like, you know, manipulation of Gamosian Duchess or something as a sexual crime.
This is brilliant because you know you just know the song's going to be in the film now.
Yeah.
So it's time.
And I love how the song, we know the song so well, so they play with your expectations right here. Rocket on the shoulders of Groot and Chris Bart. Oh, Karen Gillan.
That's Karen Gillan again.
Benicio del Toro. I love that scene.
Oh, Rocket!
They call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy.
What a bunch of a-holes.
I love these yawning.
And there you go. And the public have just absolutely fallen in love with that, I think. It's
I have spoken to a bunch of people about this trailer so far, and the general consensus is overwhelming positivity. However, I did talk to one person who actually said, I was really looking forward to it, and then I watched it, and I'm not really sure. And I started talking to him, and the reason why he wasn't sure was he was actually expecting something a little harder. And I actually said, well, no, that's actually captured the tone of the book perfectly.
Did this person read the comic?
No. Yeah. They're just going purely on the idea of Guardians of the Galaxy and, you know, and science fiction and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, no, this has actually captured the tone perfectly.
Do you know, this reminds me not as much of John Carter as Cowboys and Aliens.
Yes.
When people went into that and they came out of Cowboys and Aliens and they got a movie that was mashing up a Western with a sci-fi, and for some reason people thought that wasn't what they were going to get out of Cowboys and Aliens.
It was in the title.
Don't read my review then.
No, but the thing is, it's
Richard and I were, I think, the only two people on the planet who actually liked Cowboys.
I think so.
Aliens.
Yeah,
I've got merchandise. Yeah.
Cowboys and Aliens was so self-serious though.
But I kind of like that
this
about
at
it,
all.
But getting
no,
back
I don't compare it to this at
yeah,
all.
But sorry, getting back to Guardians. Like, yeah. Look, this to me, this is everything I was hoping for in a trailer. Mm. I was, you know, you can go back, listen to the past shows. I have been nervous as hell for this movie. I'm still worried the audience, the public may not get it. But what we actually, apparently they did a social media trending thing, and the reaction to Guardians of the Galaxy was so overwhelmingly positive compared to only a week or so before with the Captain America trailer.
Yeah.
Because Captain America took itself so seriously as
which
well.
Which I loved.
Which I think is great.
That's the right tone for Captain America.
It suits the material. Yeah. Absolutely right. And I think that people were surprised that this was so funny, but actually quite happy that it's so funny because how do you introduce a group of characters this stupid? You make fun of them yourself.
Yeah. And when I first heard about Guardians of the Galaxy as a book, I thought, this is going to be stupid.
Yeah.
And I was told, no, you have to read this, you have to read this, you have to read this. And when I finally read it, I went, oh my God, this is genius. It is funny, it is clever, it is sharp, it's great science fiction. And I sat there, I just devoured everything to do with the cosmic universe and then got Richard hooked on it as well. And it's like,
and now I'm hooked on a feeling.
And you're hooked on a feeling. And when we heard that the movie was coming, it's like, oh my God, if they get this right, this is it. This is going to be huge.
I'm going to call it now, and I'll eat a shoe on air if I'm wrong.
Eat a shoe. Okay.
Yeah. But
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, looking forward to episode 115.
Dave eats a shoe. That's our pick of the week.
We put that one on video.
Yeah. I stole it from Werner Herzog.
Okay.
But, you know,
eating a shoe.
I think
going
this will make more
time.
Money than the Avengers.
Ooh, big call.
That is a big call.
I think it's going to be
how do you like
smash hit.
How do you like your shoe down?
Yeah. Because I can't imagine any human being not paying to see that.
That's true.
Like, even the people that you're speaking to, Dave,
oh,
he
said he's going to see it. He just wasn't, he was taken aback by the tone.
There's a badass, awesome chick in it.
Yeah.
There is a talking rocket raccoon.
Who's a gun-toting rocket raccoon.
There is star power. It just, everything in it is,
and it's
perfect.
And it's branded with Marvel. Let's not forget, Marvel's last two films both crossed $1 billion.
Yeah, and Thor the Dark World was a ballsy...
Oh, sorry, I forgot about that one.
No, Thor the Dark World was a ballsy sci-fi film that made a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, let's face it was a sci-fi film.
Mm.
That had space battles, that had, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is, if they make this work, they can make anything. You'll get your Black Panther. Yeah. You'll get your Doctor
Strange.
When
I referred to the last two movies, just so the listeners know, I was talking about Avengers Iron Man 3. Those two took $1 billion each.
But Thor the Dark World Thor came did, pretty
yeah,
close.
Yeah, it did make a lot of money.
But I think this is going to be a cultural phenomenon.
I'm hoping so. I said this on the show a year ago when we first heard about this, and I still stand by it, which is if they do this right, if this is as good as this trailer makes it look, and if the audience is ready to buy it, this is this generation
and
of Star Wars.
And if there's one thing that's important, it's acknowledging the fact that we were right first.
Yeah, and this is 70s.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
this is,
so go back and see episode 41 of Behind the Panels where we're talking about
But seriously, like one really brief thought, like that song, Hooked on a Feeling, is now synonymous with Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's
a song
that it's been such an earworm as well, man.
Absolutely.
That's nothing. This is if they do this right, August is May 1977 all over again, and when Star Wars hit the waves, you know, it's like let's just see what happens.
This is what I think. Or Batman 89.
Or Batman 89. Absolutely.
And I was about to say it's time for some news headlines, but we've done those.
We've done that.
All right, let's do the one that we do after that.
Okay.
Well, see how you like this. What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week. Stan Lee, Frank Miller, Brian Michael Bendis, Ed Brubaker, each has left their mark on The Man Without Fear. In 2001, Mark Waid began a run that will forever add his name to that list of masters. Together with artists Marcos Martin, Paulo Rivera, Chris Somni, and Javier Rodriguez, Waid introduced a happier Daredevil with a spring in his step, before running him through the gauntlet, pushing him to the edge of sanity and changing his life forever. This is a modern classic. This is Daredevil by Mark Waid.
So, yeah, when this series came out in 2011, we back in issue 13, we dealt with the first six issues because it was part of a lineup that Marvel were running. It was kind of a stealth reboot.
That's how we talked about it.
It was pre Marvel Now.
It was pre-New 52.
It was pre-
well, no, just
no,
on
no,
New
no.
52.
It was around the same time, And it couldn't have been New 52 because we didn't start the series, this
No, but this had this boot had... this
it had only been going for about 6 months about that stage.
Yeah, it kind of started already.
And we were only 13 episodes in, and we decided we had to cover this book. So go back to episode 13 to go and listen to what we thought of the first... So we won't get too much into this first six issues. But the one thing I wanted to say about those is that Daredevil had a hell of a time at that stage. The previous writers, and there'd been some shaky runs. I think even Andy Diggle had a crack at Daredevil at this point. He had gone through the worst of the worst. They'd outed him as Matt Murdock, and then that whole thing happened. There's the whole Shadowland arc. He was running the Hand at one point. He was possessed by a demon. You know, it was pretty bad days for Daredevil. So when Mark Waid takes over in 2011, that first issue, and I'd completely forgotten how happy that first issue is. He's running through, kissing a bride. It's all
It's light. It's even Foggy actually is making comments about, you know, you're not right, Matt. You're never this happy.
No. It's a good book, and it sort of restored a little bit of fun to Daredevil, a character that I think people have avoided because it took itself so seriously. And I mentioned in the top of the intro there, Marcos Martin was the first artist. I'd forgotten about it because Chris Somni has become so synonymous with this book over the last 20-odd issues. But it was Marcos Martin that sort of defined this new look for Daredevil. Everything from the way his radar vision is seen.
With the grid patterns.
With the grid patterns and just the layouts in there, those really tight grids. And seeing your... And the other thing that this series reminded us almost immediately from the very first issue is Matt Murdock is blind.
Yes.
You know, that yes, he can do amazing things and he has senses that nobody else has, but he is functionally blind.
They also they not along with that idea, they also gave us weaknesses.
Yes.
So suddenly, in his real life, yes, he's blind. But as Daredevil, it was always like his radar vision and his senses make him absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
But in this, it was like loud sounds suddenly affected him. People putting confetti into the air would affect
which
him.
Which weren't new concepts, but suddenly it was part of the main story.
Yeah.
Like even I think at the end of the first or second issue, he's being like held in. Like robots have got him tied up, and he's in this sort of machine of death thing, and he's like, I have no idea what they're doing. Like, his actual words are, what are they doing to me?
Yeah.
We can see it. He can't. He doesn't actually know what's
and
happening.
And there's actually, even in the most recent issues that we have just come out, the finale of this run, there's actually one point where he says to somebody, what's it say?
Yeah.
Because he can't read it.
He can't actually read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I think, yeah, it was like someone holds out a tablet going, this has just happened.
Yeah.
You'll have to read it.
Would you say it's fair that it also reminds you that he's a lawyer?
Yes, I think the thing is that they do two things, because he's almost disbarred from practicing. Actually, at the start of the series, he can't defend. He's decided either he can't or he won't.
Well,
he
decides he won't, because every time he gets in front of a judge, basically during the jury selection process, they're completely wiped out because his daredevilness keeps coming up.
And he teaches people to be their own defense attorneys.
Yeah.
Now, the great thing about the series is that you get some really, really great arcs, and you actually get some really great daredeviling, some really great superhero stuff happening. But like Hawkeye and like She-Hulk now, it is very much about Matt Murdock the man first.
Mm.
And Daredevil second. And I think that's where your thing comes in, Dave, about him reminding us that he's a lawyer. He actually went to law school. He trained to be a lawyer.
And
at the same time, he was developing all these strange powers.
Well, actually, a lot of this book deals with Matt's personal relationships with Foggy, with girls, with whatever. With his relationship with his father, because there's a whole story arc in the middle, which is where his father's body goes missing.
And I think this makes Matt Murdock unique amongst many superheroes who either, except Peter Parker, who got his powers as a kid and then stayed as a kid superhero for quite some time. Matt Murdock is someone who got his powers as a kid, then had to go through adolescence and grow up and become an adult and learn to function as a human, then decided to become Daredevil, you know, and this is a book that is the product of that upbringing, you know, and I think that can't be understated because every other version of Daredevil that we've seen has touched on that in some way. The fact that he comes laden with so much guilt, Catholic guilt, the death of his father, the fact that he has had to live as a blind man for, you know, 20 odd years, 30, maybe 30 years of his life, you know, all these things. A part of the
and he overcame all of that to be a lawyer and everything else.
So and that's why Mark Waid's giving him a break at the start of this book, you know, and that's what where this initially starts. It does get darker again very quickly. We go through a lot of arcs, and I would say we're not going to go in as much depth as we normally go through this.
Well, it's a lot of books, and there's a lot happens.
It's 36 issues. Do you want to skip to the end first and talk about where this series ends?
I'd like to hear Longo's feeling of the book in general.
It's a masterpiece, in my opinion.
So where does it land for you? Because you weren't there when we did that original Daredevil.
I was late to it, but not that late, I suppose. Like, I just maybe want to know, like 10 or 11 issues in.
In the pantheon of Daredevil, your Frank Millers, your
I haven't
Bendis's.
Read as much as I'd like. I've read a fair bit, though. Like, I've read the Civil War stuff. I've read Kevin Smith stuff. I've read the essential Frank Miller stuff, you know, like the Elektra storyline and things like that. So as far as my understanding goes, I got a fair amount.
Yeah.
But I think this perfectly balances Matt Murdock as a human being.
But I think that's good. I think what you're saying is good there, because I think it's a Daredevil book that you don't have to be a Daredevil fan to read.
It's just so well written, though.
And that's the thing as well. I remember first discovering Mark Waid. I know he's been around for years, but I used to read a cross-gen series called Ruse.
I never read that. Yeah.
And cross-gen was a very short-lived creator-owned title that people like Chuck Dixon were a part of. I read him, and he wrote a very Sherlock Holmes-esque story, and that's what I've always loved his writing style since then. So when I heard that he was coming to Daredevil, I was quite excited, and I took the opportunity to jump back on board because I'd floated away sometime during the Brubaker era, which is something that we will be doing coming up soon, and we're actually going to have a special guest for that one. Not Ed Brubaker. I'm gonna shatter your dreams.
I'm disappointed now.
But I think, you know, and I think the other thing that's become a major part of this story, even as we go through that thing that you mentioned, the thing where he's pushed to the edge of madness when his father's bones are dug up and he has to go down into the mole man.
And that was such a long, not the actual father missing, but that whole him being pushed to the brink of madness.
Goes for like 15 issues.
It was
or something.
A really long subplot that was going on, and the payoff to that was wonderful.
And Foggy genuinely believes that he's going mad.
Yeah.
And Foggy's losing faith in him.
Well, the Foggy thing is almost the best part of it. Like, the whole thing seems to have an arc surrounding Foggy.
There's all, and then some issues actually have a backup story just about Foggy to that end. We should mention at some point during this run, Foggy gets cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
which is a bold move in itself.
Because, and I think, you know, and that's still at the end of this.
It's not resolved. Issues,
it's not resolved, no. Mm. And they're actually in a position where financially they may not be able to afford his medication and his treatment anymore. Mm.
And then that, also, like, the fear of being disbarred would also add to that.
Right, and it's
Matt
not Murdoch just
Matt Murdock's fear of being disbarred.
Basically, the climax of this, it gets to a point where he's being blackmailed. The final story arc of this whole run is that the Sons of the Serpent come back and they're threatening. They basically have their fingers in every aspect of the city. And I should find it's a really interesting story because, and this is why the ultimate ending of it is, I think, is really interesting because
the ending is a stroke of genius. I think it
is genius because Matt Murdock in New York, and this is something you were saying to me on the way back. Matt Murdock in New York
synonymous.
Yeah. They are you cannot untangle them.
He is.
He was born and raised
Kitchen.
In Hell's Kitchen. Yeah. New York is his jam, and you know the fact that there is this group, this organization that have corrupted every aspect of his city. That is a personal attack on Matt Murdock, and he takes it that way.
And he almost self sacrifices his personal life in the name of law. You know, which is so interesting to me because Matt Murdock is interesting because you know he has a life outside of being a superhero.
Yeah. Like,
that's equally as effective guarding, the legal system is just as effective for justice if you believe in it and use it correctly.
And he does,
as
he being believes
a superhero.
In it. Yeah,
yeah, and so that's the thing. Yeah. His alter ego of Daredevil is an extension of his lawyering.
Absolutely, yeah. And the whole justice is blind thing, you know, like that's the core of.
And in fact, that was probably Daredevil. The clumsy metaphor that Stan Lee was putting in.
Absolutely.
At the very, but the way writers have used that over the year, all those writers I've mentioned at the top of the show, you know, I think, you know, far more effective than a clumsy metaphor.
And like Daredevil not only sacrifices his sight, he sacrifices all his relationships, he sacrifices
How
his
many?
Friendships,
yeah.
his business, like everything in the name. And that's kind of what I think is the heart of what makes Daredevil kind of powerful as a political kind of statement.
There's actually a moment in the final issue, I think, where Foggy is saying something like, you know, the one thing I have never seen you have to do is compromise those values of yours, to compromise your sense of justice. And don't let me be the reason that you do that.
Yeah.
And they both come to an agreement of a solution to the Sons of the Serpent issue that will hurt them both financially, reputation-wise. It'll destroy their careers. It'll destroy their lives.
But it will restore justice.
But it will restore justice in New York City.
Yeah.
Even if it means they have to leave it.
Mm.
You know? And that is such an, as you said, genius ending.
It's genius.
Because it got to a point, basically, spoilers and all people, issue 36, which is out this week, so if you haven't read that yet, go read that, then come back and listen to the show. The ultimate thing is that he ends up revealing in court.
Before he reveals it, the serpent guys basically say,
"Oh, they're blackmailing
him. We know everything about you," and they lay it out. They know everything from his childhood.
Yeah.
They know everything about him, and they say, "This is stuff you don't want revealed."
Yeah.
So you will do what we want, or we will reveal it.
So he takes the power away from them completely and beats them to the punch
because
and reveals it himself.
Under oath,
yeah.
He reveals it all.
Under oath, the whole thing. And, you know, some people aren't shocked at all, but he's never told the whole story.
Yeah.
He even says why he countersued the news.
Yeah.
You know, was it the Bugle, I think?
It was, what's his name?
Ben Urich?
Ben Urich.
Yeah, well, even why he countersued, it must have been the Post then. Why he countersued the paper because he, you know, didn't want to. It was a misguided attempt at, you know, protecting that same sense of justice, you know, that same sense of protection. Was why he lied. And he said, well, no, that now that lie is being harmful to the people I love. So here's everything, you know, stuff you, Sons of the Serpent. I'm taking away your power. And he watches it. And there's actually a panel where he smiles. He's like, you know, they've sent in a whole squad of goons. It's a closed counter. I'm outnumbered completely. I've won.
He goes, what does he say? He goes, it's a sign of a desperate man.
And then at the end, justice is restored, but he has to. The only way he can continue to practice law is to move to a state that's previously, where he's previously been admitted to the bar, which was San Francisco. So like Kate Bishop in Hawkeye, he's heading out west.
Like, I just want to say Mark Waid, I think, we all know, hey, he's a master.
Yeah.
A master of comic books.
He's a master of the long game.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, if anybody's read his Independence, Irredeemable and Irreconcilable. No, that's not that's what it's called.
Do you guys, what's it called? Yeah, Irredeemable.
Irredeemable and oh my God, I forgot the spinoff.
I didn't read the spinoff.
But
I read
both of those books are amazing. They both go for about 30 issues and they tell this one...
Incorruptible.
Thank you. Yeah. My God.
We did that without Wikipedia.
There you go. Right? If only we had. No, anyway, he's this master storyteller who can take even the most convoluted ideas.
And when you look at this, this is exactly 36 issues. So that means it's exactly 3 years worth of comics telling a perfect arc. Mm. When you think about it, from issue one to issue 36, this is a perfect circle.
And it's been every month. That's such a good point. Completely consistent.
And he doesn't write anything else at the moment but Daredevil, right?
Yeah.
Hey.
When you look at the best writers at the moment.
He focuses on it.
Best writers. Brian K. Vaughan is pretty much just writing Saga and, you know.
His television stuff.
His television stuff and The Private Eye.
Yeah, because he's producing and writing Under the Dome for television.
Under the Dome, yeah. Well, but I mean, comics-wise, though, his concentration is pretty focused. Whereas other people who have written, you know, broad scattergun
Bendis?
Approach.
Sorry.
I don't have a bad thing to say about Brian Michael Bendis.
No, look, I
bring it up because it's like none of this is ever.
Who I should say, Bendis's run on Daredevil is phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal.
No, look, we've got to say Bendis is a great writer.
Yeah,
I think he is
just not
stretched
as late.
He's stretched way too thin. No, and I don't think it is because you can see when he's on his A game, it's still golden.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I think the best thing that Bendis could do right now is drop X-Men. And focus on Guardians. If that's where he's going to be, let's focus on
I think that's where the money is.
Yeah.
And this book is like probably to me the epitome of what superhero comics can be.
Yes.
Because it's packed with action. It's super fun to read. You know, it takes time out to
And
be
out of
serious.
All the other titles...
But the one thing that I love about this book is probably something really superficial, but it doesn't take me like 45 hours to read an issue.
No.
Like
no, but that's a really
it's
good
so,
point.
It's so complex and well thought out and multi-layered, but it never bores
it's
you to
so
shit.
It's so fun. That's the bottom line.
It's fun, and as you said, I think there is something to say. There's so many comics at the moment, I feel like a chore to get through. Mm. I think you mentioned before that sensation you get when you pick up Jonathan Hickman's latest issue of Avengers.
Mm.
You know it might be really good by the ending because you know there's going to be a kick-ass moment in it, but there's that moment when you pick up the first page and go... Here we go.
Yeah.
You know, you never feel that way with Daredevil. Let's go. It's Daredevil. Like, yes,
this was one of, what was it, four or five titles that were part of that whole stealth reboot that we thought about. It was Avenging Spider-Man, which was also great fun until it was massacred by Superior Spider-Man. Yes. Avengers Assemble, which was fun. Moon Knight, not so much, but that run of Punisher was part of this.
Punisher was part of
it. And you remember, in this book, there is actually a crossover of Punisher and Avenging Spider-Man.
Yes.
Where there's a three-part crossover. And it works seamlessly because they were all having so much fun in their own respective
that
books.
That was one of my favorite lines in the whole thing when Black Cat and Daredevil hook up and they're having sex in the building.
Oh, yes!
And Spider-Man's hanging down going... This is my supervillain origin story, you know. And it's one of my favorite moments in the whole run. Quick, we're running out of time, so we quickly have to mention the artwork. Apart from Javier Pulido,
Chris
that's the other one. Apart from Javier Rodriguez and Paolo Rivera, who was the initial artists, Marcos Martin, who took over from that, and then eventually, of course, the incomparable Chris Somney, who's been. Doing it for a few years now. And actually, the cover, I have to really give a massive shout out. The cover to the second volume, which is also the cover to issue 10, is this kind of very woodcut, you know, looks like something from Dante's
with
Inferno, is literally one of the best covers of the last couple of years. And it is the cover that made me start collecting this as a monthly issue physically. And then I went back and got the first 9 issues. I now have the whole run in physical. It's one of my favorite things. To look at the covers of this run because they've always been impeccable. I am so glad that when they're rebooting this next month, it's the same creative team.
Fantastic.
And it's just basically a continuation of that
story. So Wade is coming back for
Wade's coming back. Somni's coming back. Javier Rodriguez is coming back.
I'm very happy.
It's just basically that team heading out west.
So, go west, young man.
Look, fellas, I think I speak for us all when I say, David, have you got the sound clip ready?
This is Comics 101.
Absolutely.
There's no question. Hey, absolutely. That's my line.
But I'm taking it from you.
Oh, you can get this in a bunch of ways. You can get this digitally, of course. You can get it in the into the trade paperbacks. There is a, very confusingly, there's Daredevil Mark Waid Volume 1 as a trade paperback, which is like the first 6 issues, but there's also another one called Daredevil Mark Waid Volume 1, which is the first 12 issues. Confusing. Like they're releasing them almost simultaneously as it goes along. So it depends on how you want to read them, but there are infinite ways of reading this book. Mm. Whatever you do, read it.
These 36 issues. The only thing I would say is you can probably skip the annual that came out during all of this. I think they only released one.
I don't even
one.
Think that was...
It's not Waid.
No, so, it's not the same team.
No, so you can skip that. Just read the actual series. The annual
there
was
There is
not...
a 10.1 issue, which you should probably read.
Was that a AU issue? What was the 10.1?
No. It was just one of those jump on points.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
And then you got to it crosses over into...
Listen, let's also just make one quick comment, which is this isn't all fun and games. Mm. The Spot arc... that was going through the first issue through, that actually goes to some pretty dark... That goes to some dark places.
It's dark and it's bullseye. Greedy. And we already...
The bullseye arc.
We didn't even mention bullseye.
I thought I just had to chuck it in
there. The bullseye arc is one of the most powerful arcs in history because it brings back one of the biggest villains in Daredevil's history.
And you
history.
Didn't see it coming. And that was the most amazing
didn't
thing.
See it coming. We've just spoiled it for you all. Didn't see it coming.
Spoilers well, people.
And then
You'll
when it does drop,
see
it
come in.
It is the... And it is the most wretched version of Bullseye you could possibly imagine. We already mentioned the fact that, you know, he's driven to the point of madness with his father's, bones being dug up and then having to chase those down and then Foggy accusing him.
And there's just individual moments in this. The beat that came about, was it 6 issues ago, 7 issues ago, whatever it was, when Matt's walking into that room and there's the guy hanging from a noose. And you sit there going, and your heart just drops because you go, oh my God, it's Foggy.
And I'm starting to talk about this now. Look, you know, we didn't have to go into massive detail because this is a book that we've spoken about. Every issue that's come out, we've spoken about it gushingly. And I think, you know,
we just needed to put it
if
together.
If we patched together all of the episodes where we've spoken about it, you'd have more than a 60
so
minute.
So, what that's saying is you special. Should listen to every episode of this show.
No, so, go back. This is episode 89 of Behind the Panels.
He's not kidding. We could really go on for hours about it. Even like all the creative ways that. You know, the blindness is, you know, how they stop his blunt.
There is...
Well, even Captain America at one point chafes the sky and he goes, oh, there's interference in the sky. He goes, oh.
Yeah. There are very few books you can say that are near flawless for 3 years. Mm. And this is one of them.
Yeah.
And
Let alone a superhero book.
Exactly. Yeah. So, look, you know, do what you have to do. Kill somebody... we will not be responsible for anybody who kills anybody.
No, don't kill anybody, but do read the book. But do read the book.
In fact, if you read this book, you won't want to kill anybody because
it's going to make you want to go back and read other Daredevil stuff. And you're going to actually, and I know this is going to sound really controversial because of some of the great creators, but you're going to be a little bit disappointed because it's not this.
Except for Kevin Smith's Guardian Devil,
which I have not read yet. I have said it on the wonderful. Show. I haven't read it yet. But there's
I can't believe you haven't read that yet, being a huge Smith fan.
I'm waiting because I know we're going to do it as a pick at some point. So true. I want to be close. So
that's true.
I've just got it sitting on the shelf waiting for me to read it. And I thought, as soon as we make it the pick of the week, boom, I'll pick it up and I've got it. So.
Alrighty then. All right. I think we're running out of time here. So I'll just say that we all say this is must reading.
Absolutely.
And next week we'll be doing another one which we think is a must read, particularly if you really enjoyed the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. We're going to be reading a 4-issue miniseries called Annihilation Conquest Star-Lord.
Which we suspect is the basis of the film.
Yes, very much the basis. And we'll talk about that more next week. Has literally just been reprinted last week as like a prestige format, like a one-off shot that collects the whole thing. And it's just called like Star-Lord Origins or something. And so go and get that. It's also available in various trade
which you bought me for my birthday last year.
I got you the individual
as
issues.
As individuals, bagged and boarded, and they're gorgeous.
So that is basically the birth of the modern Guardians of the Galaxy. So we'll be doing that next week. Until then, you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me at TheRealBits.com again for some reason. And you can also find me, of course, on BehindThePanels.net, which is the website for this show, and weekly on Newsarama.
You can find me reading the X-Files Transformers crossover over and over and over again. I promise you I'll talk.
No, I will read that.
We're going to talk about for that for what? 10 minutes next week? Do you think?
Like, that should be our feature pick next week.
It's an impromptu pick of the week.
We should do a pick of the week of that kind of crap.
No, seriously, that is part of a wider thing where IDW is crossing over all of its licenses. And when that's finished...
Let's not forget we had Legion of Superheroes and Star Trek
and
not long ago.
What was it? Revival and Chew?
Yes.
And Chew. No, but they're literally... It's like a mashup between Transformers, X-Files, Ghostbusters, and the Turtles, I think.
Yeah.
When that's finished, I swear to you now, with Dave's as my witnesses, we will do that whole thing as a pick.
Cool.
Yes.
And apart from reading the greatest crossover ever created, where can we find you?
DamnGoodCop.com or Twitter at Dave Longo.
And you can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. Please follow me. I like followers.
And be sure to send all your feedback to feedback@behindthepanels.net. Hit us up on facebook.com/behindthepanels, which is looking very healthy at the moment. Thanks for all of those of you who have liked us recently. Tell your friends to like us as well.
Absolutely.
Until then, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
And this is Behind the Panels.